Good morning. Today is Monday, the 20th of October. My name is Chris Hartung, and this is the latest risk alert from the Center for Risk Analysis. This is a service for CRA subscribers brought to you every Monday morning at 7 a.m. by the CRA, helping you make better decisions. In this week's risk alert, we begin with the IMF's October World Economic Outlook and South Africa's Standard of Living Prospects. We then examine the rise in physical threats against top company executives in the country. Thereafter, we unpack the results of the latest round of by-elections, and we close with a look at the move to limit medical tax credits. As measured by real per capita output, a nation's economic output divided by its population, the average standard of living in South Africa is projected to fall further. The International Monetary Fund's October World Economic Outlook forecasts South Africa's real per capita output to contract by 0.3% in 2025 and once more by 0.3% in 2026. That is following on a 0.8% contraction in 2024 and a 0.5% contraction in 2023. Of the countries and regions listed in the table in question, South Africa is the only one where real GDP per capita is expected to shrink in 2025 and 2026. By contrast, Nigerian real per capita output is forecast to grow by 1.8% this year and by 2.1% next year, India's by 5.7% and 5.2% respectively, and Brazil's by 2% and 1.6% respectively. In line with CRA projections, the IMF forecasts South Africa's real GDP to grow by 1.1% in 2025, an upward revision by 0.1 percentage points compared to the July outlook, and by 1.2% in 2026, a downward revision by 0.1 points. These economic growth rates remain at or below the population growth rate, which StatsSA reports as being 1.23% in 2025. The IMF's inflation forecast for South Africa is relatively mild, with consumer prices projected to rise by 3.4% in 2025 and by 3.7% in 2026, both in the vicinity of the lower bound of the South African Reserve Bank's 3% to 6% inflation band target. The World Security Report, compiled by Allied Universal, the world's largest security company, reported a 28% rise in physical threats against top company executives in South Africa, while also noting that South African companies were among the best prepared globally to counter such threats. G4S Africa Regional President Christu Terblanche said over 75% of South African companies had reported being targeted by criminal violence last year, among the highest rates globally. This aligns with the crime risk identified in the risk alert of the 25th of August this year, which noted South Africa's 7th place on the 2023 Global Organized Crime Index, behind only Myanmar, Colombia, Mexico, Paraguay, the Democratic Republic of the Congo, and Nigeria. The index shows declining state resilience to organized crime, with law enforcement scored at 4.5 out of 10, the weakest in Southern Africa. Government's declining capacity to contain organized crime creates space for malign actors to fill these vacuums. As ANC dominance wanes, its patronage networks fracture. Groups reliant on state contracts may resist challenges to their illicit interests through intimidation and violence, for example in the construction, water and transport sectors. As local government elections approach, violence against businesses and political actors is likely to rise, especially where state tenders are contested. Recent by-election results show the ANC's vote share continuing to decline as South African politics becomes yet more competitive. While the ANC can no longer take its voters for granted, no single other party has yet managed to position itself as the default home for those disaffected ANC supporters. By-elections generally see lower voter turnout than local government elections and do not cover the entire electorate. Still, they often provide early signals regarding shifts in political support. With this caveat in mind, by-elections over the last 12 months indicate that the ANC's electoral decline is set to continue in the next local government elections, which will take place between November 2026 and January 2027. During the latest round of by-elections last week, the ANC lost 2 wards to the Patriotic Alliance, 1 to Action SA, and retained 3 wards. It lost support in 2 of those wards and grew it in 1. The party dropped by 16 percentage points to 23% in Ward 29, Noordgesig Soweto, losing the ward to the Patriotic Alliance. As elections analyst Wayne Sussman points out, the PA is the only party to have taken off wards off the ANC in Johannesburg since 2021. In Ward 7 in Northwest, Action SA won its first ever by-election by just 2 votes, relegating the ANC to second place in one of its strongholds. ANC support dropped by 25 points to 33%. In this contest, Action SA was given a boost by its decision early in the year to partner with the Forum for Service Delivery. In Ward 6 in Swellendam in the Western Cape, the ANC support dropped by 22 points and the party lost the ward to the Patriotic Alliance, which secured 51% of the vote. The PA's candidate, Julian Matteson, was previously the ANC ward councillor, but defected to the PA. Some years ago, he had defected from the African Christian Democratic Party to the ANC. ANC support also declined in the ANC stronghold provinces of Limpopo and the Eastern Cape by 11 points in Ward 2 in Messina, Limpopo, and by 7 points in Ward 15 in the Eastern Cape. Despite the fall in support, the ANC retained both of those wards. Against the trend, the ANC increased its support in Ward 4 in Langeberg in the Western Cape from 37% in 2021 to 47% in last week's by-election. Here, its candidate was the former Freedom Front Plus candidate from 2021, who brought some of his Freedom Front Plus voters with him. The picture that emerges overall is that the ANC support is declining. Some of the departing voters are joining the country's growing ranks of non-voters, while others are bestowing their favours across a spectrum of other parties, with the PA and Action SA benefiting in the latest by-elections. As voters become more willing to experiment and more discriminating in who they vote for, parties will have to compete harder for their votes. The implementation of the National Health Insurance Scheme remains a core part of ANC policy, and the government is pressing ahead with it. This, even though the scheme faces multiple legal challenges and could cost around 1 trillion rand per year to implement, according to business group Sakalicha. Last week, the Health Department confirmed it was working with the Treasury on imposing medical tax credit thresholds as part of its NHI implementation. Imposing thresholds is the first step in a process aimed at eliminating such credits entirely. Once in place, this will increase the tax burden on medical aid members substantially and render private medical cover unaffordable for many members. The Deputy Director General for NHI at the Health Department, Dr. Nicholas Crisp, views medical tax credits as a loss to the fiscus of about 34 billion rand that should instead be used for the NHI. Dr. Katlego Motudi, the Managing Director of the Board of Healthcare Funders, noted that Dr. Crisp had recently submitted an affidavit to the High Court stating that the government was not considering the removal of medical tax credits in the short or medium term. This plainly contradicted his subsequent admission in Parliament that discussions with the Treasury were in fact underway to phase them out. Dr. Mutudi added that phasing credits out would punish people for trying to fund their own healthcare and push many out of the system entirely, placing further pressure on a public sector that was already stretched. Supporting his view, the chair of the Health Policy Unit at the Free Market Foundation, Mike Setas, said that Dr. Crisp's statement that the tax credits were a loss to the fiscus of 34 billion rand was simplistic and one-sided. It failed to consider that medical aid members mostly did not make use of the public health system, thereby reducing the financial burden on the state to deliver healthcare. With an effective moratorium in place that prevents medical schemes from offering low-cost benefit options, the removal of medical tax credits would force many private medical scheme members to rely entirely on the public health system. Even though the Council for Medical Schemes formed stakeholder forums in 2019 to design and implement low-cost medical scheme options, it has yet to permit any of these reforms. That is all from us for this week. We wish you a successful week ahead, and we'll be back with you next week, Monday morning at 7 a.m. sharp, with the latest risk alert.